and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Trump administration, with Kiev in tow, has proposed a 30-day ceasefire plan to end the conflict in Ukraine. Is it a good deal? Perhaps, maybe. However, the West must prove that it's a trustworthy partner. That's a tall order. Crosstalking ceasefires, I'm joined by my guest, Ian Proud, in London. He is a senior British diplomat and author of A Misfit in Moscow, How British Diplomacy in Russia Failed. In Basel, we have Andriy Telyashenko. He is a former Ukrainian diplomat. And in Minsk, we cross to Oleg Voloshin. He is a former member of the Ukrainian parliament. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Ian, if I can go to you first, as a former diplomat, what do you make of this ceasefire idea coming out of the United States essentially being mandated for Ukraine to follow? I guess for all of us, the devil's in the details. There's so few details. I would like to point out at the top here, gentlemen, that Russia has said it's never been interested in a ceasefire. But this is what the Trump administration is presenting Russia. Go ahead, Ian.
So the fighting has to stop, and it seems to me that the person most invested in keeping on fighting has been Zelensky himself. Actually, what the ceasefire offers is a chance for talks to take place about the long-term peace plan that Russia demands, which includes obviously taking NATO off the table. So from that perspective, if it can deliver that, then it may be a good thing.
Okay, well, Andriy, with the announcement of this ceasefire plan, Russia has, as we're speaking right now, Russia has not agreed or not agreed to it. It's unclear. Obviously, they want clarification on what the negotiations were like. But with the resumption of aid and intelligence, tell me how this is different than the Biden administration. It's exactly the same as the Biden administration. So I'm asking everyone, all of you, what has changed? Go ahead, Andriy.
That is the problem here. You are offering a ceasefire deal for 30 days, and then you're renewing all the weapons right to Ukraine, all the intel information to Ukraine. Why not put a ceasefire for 7 days? It's enough to make the negotiations to continue, and then it's not enough time for the Ukrainian army to reinstall itself in their positions. And it's, so why have 30 days? Why have 90 days? If this is going to continue, this is a stage for Ukraine to reset up its military, what it did in 2022 after Russia signed the Istanbul agreements. So there is no difference. I think the Trump administration has no direct plan on Ukraine. So they're putting into what is being affected or what is being talked about on the ground right now and putting it on the table to Russia. That's very unfortunate. I know that personally that Trump does want peace and does want to make a deal with Russia. But I think with his surroundings and people, Russophobes around his team, that's going to be a problem. They're going to try to push for this war to continue and for Ukraine to, or and for the deep state to make more money on this from the military-industrial conflict. That is the biggest strategy of all this, because if this peace, so-called ceasefire plan will be put into effect, Ukraine does reinstall its army one way or another, it's going to be more losses and more tragedy after 30 days, because if this breaks up, Russia's going to hit hard on this, because it was not the first time it was lied to in Minsk, in Istanbul, and now today. So this is not a good idea for Russia to take this plan into effect and put it for peace. There has to be end of war completely, not just a ceasefire for 30 days.
Well, yeah, Andriy, that actually goes to the last sentence of my introduction. Can the West be trusted here? And you've brought up the examples. We had the first process was in Minsk. We had the Minsk Accords, Istanbul. And so is this the same continuation? Let me go to Oleg here. Obviously, Zelensky is not happy with this. He's not getting his security guarantees, at least at this stage here. I mean, how does his standing in Ukrainian politics now, because I mean, the Russians are not being punished. He's not winning, and it looks like, at least for many people in punditry, it looks like Trump is siding with Russia, which I think is absurd. But I mean, how does Zelensky appear now in Ukrainian politics?
Do you hear me fine? We shouldn't buy whatever Zelensky says. So when he speaks about security guarantees, we should crystal clearly understands that the only guarantees he does need is guarantees of his safety and power, and that his guarantees of him keeping the money that he managed to steal from Ukrainians and from Americans and from Europeans for the years he's in power. Whenever he speaks of any guarantees, the only guarantees he's really interested in is his personal guarantees for himself, his entourage. That's why he's not happy, because that's exactly the kind of guarantees no one is giving to him. And that's why it's so funny when someone in the West starts pretending they really think that it's going about Ukraine. That's what worries me most. And especially when I hear from the Trump administration people that they do understand the legitimate concerns of Mr. Zelensky. It's a bit strange, given that they made a U-turn. Just 2 weeks ago, they said he's a dictator, a legitimate president, and there's a need for fresh elections. And then now they speak about the legitimate concerns of Mr. Zelensky and Ukrainian government. So the greatest question, I believe, that is today in Moscow, is how serious Trump administration really is, what you started with our debate. How serious it's about changing the course of Biden administration.
Well, I mean, more to your point, Oleg, I mean, why didn't the announcement of the 30-day ceasefire plan include elections in Ukraine? A lot of people are asking that, okay? And is this the opening gambit? I mean, is this like, this is the, you know, everyone's getting into the parlay right now. This is the first step of a first part of a process here. I'm trying to be very generous here. I'm trying to be very generous and open-minded, because my first reaction obviously was very negative. But you're an experienced diplomat. Is this how it starts, or in this case, is the only way it could start? Go ahead, in London.
Well, it has to start with an end to the fighting, and there has to be a dialogue about what the future peace plan, you know, looks like that guarantees, you know, Russia's future security and so on. But I think there's a much bigger game at play here. Anyway, people are focused on the short term and the fighting. I don't think Trump has any intention of actually propping up the sort of military activity of the Kiev regime over long term. They've been very clear about that. What we're talking about right now is a much more substantive strategic reset of US-Russian relations on the broad sort of economic front. And when you look at it from that perspective, the kind of potential benefits to, you know, Russia, to President Putin himself, are actually probably greater than just maintaining a gradual kind of a winning attritional warfare against the Ukraine for an indeterminate period of time and possibly losing that relationship with the US. So I actually think that is a bigger game at play here right now, much more than the short-term tactical, well, will Ukraine be armed? I personally don't think they'll be able to, and that sort of thing. I think people are missing the much bigger picture, which, in fact, President Putin was just talking about yesterday in quite a wide-ranging interview.
Yeah, well, Andrei, I take on board what Ian just said right there, but Russia cannot compromise its security. See, everybody's focused on, you know, Europe's security. The Europeans have their hair on fire. They think Russia is going to, you know, be in 10 Downing Street by the evening, okay? And the Ukrainians obviously are clamoring for it. But nobody considers for a second that Russia wants security guarantees. That's why this conflict started in the first place. Andrei.
Yeah, it started not in 2022, it started 14 and even before. This is the problem. Nobody was listening to what's happening on the borders of Russia. If this would happen on the borders of the United States, Canada, Mexico, it would be a different picture. We're seeing how the United States reacts to national security interests 10,000 miles from its border, destroying Afghanistan, destroying Libya and everything else in Yugoslavia. This was the reaction to their national security, so-called interest, what they said. And this is at the border of Russia, one of the largest nuclear countries. And Ukraine was always taught as a territory that was part of Russia. We were one country for more than 350 years. And here, the West came in here, and they have to make the first move. They started this war. They were the ones who overthrew the government in Ukraine. And I think the Trump administration is moving forward to acknowledging that publicly, and saying that there was an overthrow of government and the deep state, Nuland was behind, and people like Nuland were behind it. So hopefully this will be in the picture of the peace negotiations further on. But today, the West, the ball is in their hands. They have to actually stop this war. They have to stop sending weapons to Ukraine. They have to stop sending spies to Ukraine and supporting Zelensky and giving him advice on how to act. This is their strategy. of war, and it has to stop because it's on the border of Russia, and Ukraine is suffering for this because Americans and the West wanted this war to happen.
Yeah, Oleg, can Zelensky, because your first answer was it's all about Zelensky, went for Zelensky, can he be trusted? It's safe, hypothetically, a ceasefire comes into effect. Could he be trusted? Go ahead.
Yes, sir. It's okay. It's just sound. Sorry, I have some technical problems, sir.
Okay.
You see, we'll find out quite soon how it all develops. Definitely, Russia is between the Scylla and Charybdis of not alienating Trump and at the same time not agreeing to something that is absolutely not sustainable and that will be ruined very easily. However, so it's just a coincidence. I have in my cabinet the portrait of Otto von Bismarck, and it was already recalled by many Ukrainian Russian political experts that during the Berlin Congress at the end of victorious for Russia Russo-Turkish war, Bismarck exactly tried to do what now Trump tries to do, the fair makler, right, fair mediator. But everyone remembers that as a result of this Congress, it was Russia from whom the victory was almost stolen with this mediation. That's why, yes, it was back in the 19th century, but still everyone remembers that speaking about the general things like peace, human lives, etc., that sound very noble, they just try to understand whether Trump really is so on the surface, he's just playing on the side of Ukraine.
I have to jump in here. We're at a point where all sides could lose if this doesn't go the right way. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on ceasefire. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing ceasefires. Okay, Ian, obviously, what we heard initially coming from Secretary of State Marco Rubio is a 30-day of cessation of hostilities. Immediately following, the Americans will continue to arm and give intelligence to Ukrainians. What about the issues that Russia cares about? This is a fact pattern, is that the West, when it deals with countries around the world, it negotiates about what it wants. It doesn't really care about their interlocutor, okay? Russia is concerned with its borders, okay? Russia would like its $300 billion back. Russia would like to see the end of sanctions. I mean, where's the sweetener for Russia? It never is there. It's a fact pattern, it's a mentality, and that's gotta change if this is gonna work. Ian.
Well, I've been quite clear, I think the Americans have been quite clear that actually the NATO option is now unrealistic and that should be taken off the table. I think the Trump administration has been clear on that point, and I think that there's that thing from the start. I said for some time now there has to be a package of sanctions relief from the very beginning that's included within, the peace planning, however that's, conceived. And within that, there has to be some final reckoning on this kind of frozen assets. Now, you're right to say that most of the mainstream media in the West, just want to carry on as if nothing different has happened. They want to kind of keep NATO on the table. They want to give more sanctions to Russia after peace has been agreed, which is a totally nonsensical agreement, a nonsensical sort of idea. I think the Trump administration is much more realistic on that. I mean, the Ukrainians wanted a 30-day ceasefire while the fighting continued on the ground. The Americans have already told them, no, that's not going to happen. So what I think is happening right now is that the Americans are strong-arming Zelensky to say, well, look, guy, you have to cut a deal, and that's where we're at right now. So I do believe that Trump will be willing to kind of take these things off the table and address concerns that that Russia puts forward as part of the process.
Well, Andrei, my job is to be a cynic in all of this here. So we have this, again, parenthetically, we have a 30-day ceasefire. The Russians agree to it, okay? We don't know the details yet, but it's agreed to. Then the Europeans are going to send in so-called peacekeepers? I mean, that's moving NATO into Ukraine. I mean, again, how is this different than the Biden administration? I mean, the language is different, the rhetoric is different, the names are different. But, I mean, you have these warmongers in Europe that say, you know, we're going to send our troops here. Those are NATO troops, okay? I don't care if they're French or Italian or British. It doesn't make any difference to the Russians, okay? I mean, I don't know if that is just a bluff on their part, but the fact that they're talking about it shows that, you know, there's an enormous amount of distrust still. I thought that, you know, getting a ceasefire is the first step of creating trust. We're not even close to that. Go ahead, Andre.
The problem is Ukraine, the history of the ceasefires for Ukraine, also to get back to this, it all started with Ilovaisk. We had the Minsk, then the Kyiv was surrounded, we had the Istanbul, and now we have Kursk, and the total destruction, 66,000 Ukrainian soldiers dead within this whole so-called strategy. Now we have the Saudi Arabian peace deal talks for Ukraine and the ceasefire. So every time when Ukraine loses, the regime in Kyiv loses, they agree to some peace deals to move to refurbish the army. That's bad, and it has. This cannot be agreed upon at all by anybody. That's first of all. Second of all, who are these European troops? They're not part of the UN. These are not UN troops. They're involved. What guarantees they have that they're going to leave there or be neutral? Nothing, because these countries are on the path of warmongering. France was part of the Minsk agreements. They actually bluffed on this and reinstalled the Ukrainian army, which bombed the Donbass area, which killed more than 15,000 people there. So they have no authority in this situation. The UK government today, which is warmongering the situation, doesn't want peace, cannot have that authority. The Germans also, with their history background and the situation with their sending in tanks into Ukraine, they don't have the authority for talking peace. So these countries do not have any authority to send any troops. Only the United Nations, if there will be a treaty agreed upon, both parties, United States and Russia, then this talk can start. Any other ways, it's an invasion of Ukraine by NATO and warmongers.
Well, Oleg, I mean, if there isn't a significant change in leadership in Ukraine, I don't think there's any reason to believe that they would honor any kind of ceasefire moving forward, even if it's called a permanency or a frozen conflict, all these other terms people like to throw out. If Zelensky and his gang around him remain in power, then I can't believe that they're going to give up. They're just going to look for another attempt to start a conflict with Russia, hoping they'll have the West's support. I mean, give me one reason to believe these people believe in peace. Go ahead, Oleg.
Exactly, there's no reason because, look, Poroshenko was the guy who was supervising the Minsk agreement ceasefire. And he never delivered. He never met his commitments. He didn't want, so maybe he wanted, but it doesn't matter. He said he was pressured by nationalists, he was pressured by the West, but this is the result. There was a very different president over whom Zelensky won exactly because he promised to deliver. Zelensky won elections in 2019 just because he promised to implement Minsk agreements. Like 90% because he did promise. And he tried to even first 6 months of his tenure. And then what he again encountered the opposition of the radical nationalists. And then supported by London and CIA and other structures, he just twisted all the obligations, and he didn't continue to deliver. So that's why I understand Russia doesn't have any history of successful cooperation with any post-Maidan Ukrainian leadership. They don't trust anyone. That's the point. So without the full reconstruction of the Ukrainian political system, no ceasefire will be observed for simple reason, because all these people benefit from confrontation with Russia. If there is no confrontation, they just disappear. There'll be too many uncomfortable questions with the corruption, with the impoverishment of the majority of Ukrainians, and many, many other questions. So Poroshenko, Tymoshenko, name whoever, each and every of them are interested in the continuation of confrontation with Russia. So why Russia should just change Zelensky for whoever? That was the question, why Putin didn't kill Zelensky? Because whoever comes instead of him will be the same. And maybe Zelensky, because he's stupid, is not the worst variant for Russia, exactly. So I do think that if the West, especially if Trump, does want really, please, he needs to get into the look into the situation inside Ukraine and guarantee that there is some government that really is not interested in continuation of confrontation with Russia. That's the principle. Thing. It's not a matter of the name. It's a matter of the philosophy of these people.
And you said in your first answer about a great reset, okay? And we had Marco Rubio in an interview not too long ago where he talked about a multipolar world, which was quite remarkable for a Secretary of State to actually utter those words. But do you think countries like the UK and the United States can, you know, function in a multipolar world? I mean, they've always, at least in our lifetime, hegemony has always been the goal. Can they step back from that?
Well, the Trump administration does appear to want to do that, and it would be difficult to kind of overstate just how far it's gone in resetting on a diplomatic level the relationship with Russia. They actually jointly kind of tabled the UN Security Council motion on ending the fighting in Ukraine, which was completely unheard of for the previous decade. They've had substantive dialogues about normalizing the day-to-day diplomatic relationship. Stuff is moving on the economic front. Honestly, there were huge changes taking place, and President Putin was talking yesterday about cooperation, you know, letting US firms help with aluminium production, you know, in Russia. So, you know, these massive seismic shifts are happening.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, and that's why I wanted to go back to this point here. Why doesn't Trump reach out and to Russia and the European Union and say, let's have a grand security conference. Everybody's invited. Everybody gets to say their piece. I mean, the way to solve this problem is not looking at the small and going out. It's looking at the big and looking in. If you look at everyone's security, indivisible security, then it solves the Ukraine problem. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would agree. And in fact, Trump has said, you know, and Putin has been speaking about this, you know, this idea of the US, Russia and China unilaterally kind of cutting by 50% their defense spending. So, you know, these big conversations, these kind of strategic conversations, which also happened in the 1980s, appear to be happening, you know, right now. And actually, the Europeans are being left out of the tent, you know, flailing with no sort of direction in this. I mean, that this multipolar world at the moment doesn't include the European Union or indeed the United Kingdom, because they are kind of stuck in the past. So, I mean, it's a risk to us, but I think for Russia, China, the US, I think big changes appear to be happening.
You know, Andre, will Russians and Ukrainians be friends again anytime soon?
Look, we had a lot of differences in our past. We were one country for more than 350 years together. We had the Civil War in the beginning of the 20th century. More than millions and millions were killed. Even then, Russians and Ukrainians stayed together as one country, fought the Second World War together, won it together, and lived together. So there is a chance, a big chance, that we can be back together if there's going to be proper government, no Nazi regime puppeted by somebody outside of Ukraine, by the West especially, who has no interest in this part of the world, only to take from it, not to invest in it. And for Russia, we were, as one nation, we have families and combined together, which are now torn apart.
Yep.
So this can be brought back together easily if you have the truth back, give people their lives back, normal lives for them to make babies, go to work, live a normal life, and the life will be back. There will be no hatred. And this, the main thing is to have a normal, righteous government, a statehood that will be working into their people, not destroying their own people from inside.
I'd like to point out to our viewers the animosity and hatred that some Ukrainians have towards Russia and Russians is not reciprocated. Russia doesn't feel that way about Ukraine, and it doesn't feel that about Ukrainians. It does have animosity towards people that hold Nazi ideas, neo-fascist ideas. All right, gentlemen, in lieu of more information, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in London, Basil and in Minsk. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.